relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you like America First, then check out our separate podcast, The Battle for 1600, with my former White House colleague, Boris Epstein. Every week, we give you the inside, in-depth analysis of what's really going on. The Battle for 1600. Subscribe today.
Fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome, dear friends, to this very special President's Day edition of America First with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump, member today of the National Security Education Board. And we're going to do something I've been wanting to do for a very long time. I love the long form. It's hard to do when you've got a live radio show that is being heard on the West Coast at lunchtime, drive time in the East Coast. But on days like this, John Batchelor does. We're going to go deep dive. We're going to have one of our favorite people in studio for the whole hour, a loyal supporter of the show. He gives us our national security foreign policy updates every Friday. Jim Carafano of the Heritage Foundation, welcome in studio.
It is great to be with you.
So let's do something that we should have done a long time ago. Who is James Carafano? Tell us the story. Tell us the story. What you did in the military, family background, and how you ended up where you are today as vice president of the conservative mothership.
Well, this will be a short...
No, it won't.
Short story. Well, first of all, I was born in the South. In the South Bronx. And, you know, like all Italians, you move to Long Island. And so... And my dad, we talked about this before. My dad was a cop, and I remember him telling us. My dad actually worked in construction, and he said, this was after he got out of the army after the Korean War, and he said, I had a choice. He says, I could have become a mobster or a cop.
And, he actually said that?
Yeah, he did say that because he actually worked for a guy who, as were most
had connections.
He was a mobster. I mean, as were most of the construction heads, right. You know, companies in New York. And, you know, he did stuff like drove around and stuff like that. He didn't do anything, you know, illegal. But the guy kept saying, hey, Charlie, you know, if you want to make some real money, you know, let me know. And my dad did want to be a cop. And so he took a job out in Long Island. So when we were tiny, we moved out to Long Island and I grew up there. And as you know, I went to the military academy. And had nothing to do with my father being in the military of the Korean War or anything else. It had to do with, I was an athlete in high school. And so I was recruited to go to West Point. And the other thing I applied
to play
to wrestling. And the other place I was looking at was University of Florida, which had a really good architecture program. Anyway, and so I got, actually got accepted to the University of Florida first, and they said, send us $50 deposit for the dorm, which at the time I thought was like $1 million.
Right.
And my dad said, hey, let's wait and see till we hear from West Point. And I was like, okay, whatever. And so this letter comes from West Point that said, you know, you've been accepted. And I one look at my father's face, and I was like, oh, well, I guess I know where I'm going to school, because I could not disappoint that guy. And
because it's such a big deal for him.
I knew nothing. I knew nothing about the military. I didn't know about the marching or any of this stuff. You know, I just said, what the heck, you know? And, you know, my father later told me the story that, you know, he actually, the first thing you do at West Point is you have this thing called Beast Barracks, which is you come in and it's just like anybody that's ever been to or seen a movie about basic. You come in, they shave your head, you know, they you're marching around in attention all the time. You know, it's all about kind of tearing you down and building you back up. And so about a month and a half in, you can actually see people. And my dad was came up to see me, and I just was so emotional, like to see my father, see somebody who wasn't going to yell at me. And so he took me to lunch at the hotel there, which was the hotel that's on the base.
Yes.
And it was the first meal I had, you know, in a month where nobody yelled at me. And for some reason, he just started talking about his experience. It was the first time he ever talked about
Korea
and the Yalu River and the Chinese attack on the Yalu River. And he told me that, you know, he'd had a lieutenant in that he served under who was a West Point graduate. And my dad thought he was the best leader he'd ever met in his entire life. The lieutenant was actually killed in combat. But my father's complete impression of West Point was this lieutenant that he had known in the Korea. And to him, it was just like, that's where somebody would go to become a man. And so
the pressure was on.
I love West Point. I had a great time. I do. There's a place there called Cullum Hall, and where they have all these kind of plaques and stuff. And they have a huge plaque there, which has all the KIA graduates from the Korean War. And I remember going there and looking and seeing this guy's name on that plaque. And it's, you know, kind of an unforgettable moment. So I actually stayed in the military for 25 years because I couldn't think of anything better to do.
And your specialty was?
So I started as an artillery officer, and I actually started working in nuclear weapons. And when I tell people now that I used to build nuclear weapons, it makes them very worried about the how do we get through the Cold War. But I was in Korea. I had a couple of tours in Germany. I worked in the Pentagon for the chief of staff in the Army. I was his speechwriter. And as I was getting ready to retire and still not really knowing what I wanted to be when I grew up,
Weapons was too boring.
Well, there just wasn't the other than Al-Qaeda, there was like no civilian application for who wants somebody that can build a nuclear weapon. So I had taught at the military academy. I thought, well, that was the only thing I'd done in the Army that actually had a civilian application. So I thought I would be a history professor. So I got a graduate degree. And while I was waiting to
in history
to find a place to teach, I went to work in a think tank just to pay the bills. And while I was there, I got a call from a guy I knew who worked at Heritage who said, invited me to come work at Heritage. And that was 18 years ago. And I've been at Heritage for 18 years. And, you know, there's not much difference between being in the Army and being in Heritage. In the Army, you wear a uniform. In Heritage, you wear a tie. And they're both organizations which are based on a mission. And it's not that different a mission. It's keeping America free, safe, and prosperous. And so I always loved Heritage because of that sense of I'm continuing to serve my country. The people there are fabulous. I get to work on all these incredible issues, travel the world, meet all kinds of people. Actually, that's how, you know, Seb and I first got together many, many times in different ways. So what I love about what I do, there's this Machiavelli wrote this thing. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it's something like he would say that because people don't realize that Machiavelli had a day job. First of all, he's Italian, so he had to be a good guy. But
if he wasn't a mobster, right?
But Machiavelli, he was did a lot of things, including he was the paymaster for the militias that were guarding the city,
right.
And he was also a deep intellectual and a self-taught intellectual, and he this thing about the, that the value of a man that can go out, you know, during the day and get his boots all muddy and dirty and then come back at night and sit down at his table and think. And I always thought that this balance of a life in the real world of actually doing things and getting cold and dirty and shot at. Not, I mean, I was shot at, but I think somebody did it by accident. Unlike Joe Biden, and this kind of intellectual and fusing those two worlds together, it's like do things that are going to work in the real world, but be thoughtful and about that. And so at Heritage, I get to live that. So it's exciting for me.
I think this is why we connect at a certain level, because, you know, we both taught at military, you know, war colleges. We knew each other from National Defense University. And one of the things that I always said at the beginning of my classes to my cohorts of officers is theory is great. You can read theory. But if it doesn't mean anything in the real world, it's just an utter waste of time. Right. For me, and I don't care whether you're studying to be a neuroscientist, a nuclear weapons expert, or I don't know, architect, it doesn't matter. If you can't answer the so what question with regards to that theory, that book, whatever, then it's ignore it. Praxis. Theory's great, right. But if it doesn't have an impact on the real world, don't waste my time. Yeah. We're talking, save it. We're talking to none other than the vice president of the conservative mothership, the Heritage Foundation. Join today, heritage.org. James Carafano. Follow him at JJ Carafano on Twitter. I'm Sebastian Gorka. Very special edition of America First on the Salem Radio Network for President's Day. We've got Jim in studio for the whole hour. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, don't touch that dial.
Making sense out of today's news, here's Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
We are reveling in being able to spend the whole hour with somebody who's been a great friend to America First. He runs all matters national security and foreign policy for the Heritage Foundation. Jim Carafano telling us where it all began. Seminal moment, sitting down with his dad, Korean War vet, at the restaurant in Thayer at West Point. First time he spoke to him. Let me run this past. You said that fabulous story about you go to the University of Florida, but they want $50 for the accommodations. West Point, it's free. Probably one of my most important mentors ever was a Marine, died far too young, Colonel Nick Pratt. He's the guy who got me involved in teaching for the Defense Department. And he really wanted our son to go to Annapolis like he did. And he just said one day, you do understand that the military academies are the Ivy League for free. It's really quality stuff, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's true. The other great thing about military service in general, and this is a big issue. I mean, it's something we've talked about on this show before, and certainly something worth reflecting on President's Day, is that, you know, 70% of the American youth today are not even qualified for military service.
So if they were drafted or they wanted to, they wouldn't actually qualify.
Because of, you know, a health issue or a legal issue or lack of education or something, which is, I think, terrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that everybody has to, and not that the military makes you a man. I don't think that that's true. I think when I got to West Point, I just kind of shrugged my shoulders because I was like, well, this is stuff my parents taught me to love my country, right? It's duty, honor, country. Okay, love my country. Well, yeah, my parents kind of told me that one. It's like, don't lie, cheat, or steal. Yeah, my parents kind of that be an honorable person that people respect. So these were all things that were very natural to me. So I don't think you go to the military to learn how to be a good citizen. That's, I think, your parents' job. And
well, let's stop for a second on that first one. Let's talk about how many millennials love their country today, Jim. Forget about serving in the military. This is an issue, isn't it?
I know, and they should, right? Because this is the model for freedom in the modern world. I mean, one of the reasons why we so celebrate President's Day is not because of who presidents are. It's because who presidents are not. They're the first leaders in the history of human leaders that voluntarily walk away from power.
Yeah.
They're the first leaders in the history of human history who are given power because the people who are sovereign elect them. Now there are leaders like this all over the world. But when this started, which is why we call America the exceptional nation, nobody in the world thought that this was a good idea except us. And we were the great international experiment.
We forget too easily. It's revolutionary. I mean, even back then, they wanted Washington to be king for life or president for life.
It's still revolutionary. If you go to China today, they would say what the Americans are doing is nutty. Yeah, we're going to crush them.
It's anarchy. It's anarchy, right?
We're going to crush them. That's what they say. And I agree with you. I mean, the civic pride is something that's really, and the NBA says, well, we're not going to play in a national anthem at the beginning of the game. It's like, do you not understand that the tradition of playing the national anthem at sporting events, because sporting events were things where we all came together, Republican, yes, Democrat, liberal, conservative, where we sat as one, we played by the rules, and we started by celebrating the fact that we could do that by the creation of that, which is what the national anthem is really about. So this notion that, you know, military service is an honorable thing, I think it's great. Not everybody has to do it, but it's a great thing to do and instill in our families and our children. What I got out of the military was the thing that you just talked about, and why I think if you're qualified and you want to do this, this is the opportunity of a lifetime, other than the getting shot at part, which is you will meet people who have internalized and believe in all these great things. And the way you become a great leader is you lead. And in the Army, you have to lead every day. So, you know, these guys have 10, 15, 20 years of experience. And the two men who changed my life, who made me the person I am today, were people that I worked in the Army, and they weren't even nice. They actually had the funny thing is both of them had reputation as kind of the meanest guys on the planet Earth.
My favorite teacher at school was the meanest SOB Latin teacher. But did we respect him? Did he teach us? You betcha.
But they invested time in me and
what ranks were they?
One was one was a colonel. He became a general, and the other one was a colonel, and he became a general. And actually, I've worked for them both multiple times. So if you ever, next time you're at my office, I have this incredible photograph on my desk, which is, like I said, I was the speechwriter for the Army Chief of Staff when I retired, who was also a fabulous man and who I really privileged to serve. And when he was retiring, I was collecting his papers to publish, and I was going through all his photographs because we were illustrating the photographs. And I came across a photograph of him and one of my mentors in Vietnam.
Wow.
They were in the same battalion. And the battalion commander actually absconded. He went back on leave and never came back. And so these two guys, who at the time would have been maybe 30, these two guys ran the battalion. And, one of them became a 4-star general, one of them became a 3-star general, and I'm the one working for both of them. And I'm like, well, is that the weirdest feeling ever? And I look at those guys every day, you know, when I come into my office, because there's just these two young guys there. But
biggest thing they taught you? What was it about them?
No, they really taught me how to lead. I think in high school, it's like, I didn't really want to lead. I just, like, you know, I was, you know, I was the dumbest kid in class. I would just do stuff. It was just much easier to do things yourself rather than like try to convince somebody else to do something. And that was actually the part of West Point that I was like, do I really have to lead people? Can't I just go do it and like tell them it's done and then come by later on and pick up their paychecks, right? But in the Army, you actually have to get people to do stuff. And they kind of beat this into me that getting people to do stuff is actually not just getting them to do it, but actually having them enthusiastic and committed to that is the acme. And they taught me how to do that. And actually, it turns out I love doing that.
We're talking to Jim Carafano, getting to know him much better than we get in just those two segments we have every Friday. Follow him right now on Twitter, JJ Carafano. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Thank you so much to everyone who supported Mike Lindell in the last week here on America First. You have knocked it out of the park. Absolutely incredible. Tens of thousands of you are supporting a man who they're trying to cancel. The list of companies boycotting him now includes CVS, JCPenney, Bed Bath & Beyond. Send a message to those who want to cancel those they disagree with. Go to MyPillow.com, MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. He's got over 100 products now. You can get 60% off if you use my name, Mike Lindell, a great American, great products made here in the U.S. of A, MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. Do it today. Support Mike. Thank you. This year marks 20 years since America's darkest day, September the 11th, 2001. And the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been supporting America's frontline heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays off their mortgage to lift the financial burden and bring their family stability. For catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling our most severely injured heroes to live more independent lives. Our nation's heroes, people who are willing to die for you and me, need your help. Join Tunnel to Towers on their mission to do good and help these heroes. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's the letter T, the number 2, and the letter T.org. That's T2T.org. Thank you.
You're listening to America First with Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Donald J. Trump.
If you're trying to do the back of the envelope math, you're listening to our long-form interview with our good buddy James Carafano. 25 years with the Army, 18 years at Heritage. You know that he started at the age of 10, right? You went to West Point at the age of 10, right, Jim?
They know I'm old enough to get a COVID vaccine.
All right, don't boast. Don't boast. Don't come here and boast. So let's transition. Great to hear the stories about you, West Point, your dad, Korea, then the work you did with your mentors in the Army. Tell us about this place where you've been for 18 years. What is the Heritage Foundation? What does it do? And this great new president you have, K. Cole James.
Yeah, so the Heritage Foundation is a think tank, and I think a lot of people don't understand what are think tanks. So if you think about it, it's like you have a university. Okay, take away the students, right?
That's nice.
And make them relevant, right? So it's people that get together that think about public policy. And then independent, you know, of academia, independent of governments, independent of industries, and then provide those ideas out there. It's actually it's been around forever. We've had think tanks really going back to the early days. We talked about West Point. There was a group at West Point called the Philosophical Society, which were a bunch of people that got together and tried to think of, you know, how can we do better military things, improve the country. It really accelerated during the Industrial Revolution because in the Gilded Age, we had all these guys with so much money they couldn't even spend it all. So guys like Carnegie and Ford, and they
would make these big donations.
Yeah, and they gave a ton of money to universities. But they also said, you know, they created independent institutions to think about the big problems of the day, everything from poverty to, you know, war. And they really started, and some of these are around today. The Carnegie Foundation is still spending Andrew Carnegie's money.
Yeah.
So what's
special about Heritage? Right, what is Heritage?
It was started in the 1970s by a couple of very young men who came up. And what happened was it was part of the conservative revival. So if you think of the crash and burn of the 1960s and the defeat of Barry Goldwater, and people said, well, it's not that Barry Goldwater had bad ideas. It's just that we had not created the political capital in the United States for them to succeed. And if you remember the 1970s, you know, hyperinflation, you know, low productivity, you know, the military was in a terrible shape. It was really,
oil crisis.
And, you know, people talked about the collapse. People would literally talk about the collapse of America. And they said, it's time to get America back in the game. And so they said, well, you know, think tanks can help jumpstart that process, coming up with the powerful conservative ideas, right? So so they brought these, Ed Foner and Phil Trulock, with these two young guys. Ed, they actually brought Ed on the board when they created this think tank. And after they went through some leadership, they said, well, let's just give it to the young guy. and it was a couple of actually big donors that started, like Joseph Kors. And a few others. And they said, well, here's some money to get you started. Dude, you're on your own.
And he'd been a staffer, right?
He was a staffer in Congress. And they did two things. One is they decided, we want a think tank that just doesn't publish reports, but that actually takes good ideas and then tries to convince people to actually implement them. So we want them to be relevant. And the other thing is
and that has something to do where you're physically located, right?
Right, which is right. We're next to... Right next to Congress. Matter of fact, you can see the Berlin Wall from
the razor wire
from my office. And the other thing they said is, we don't want to be beholden to anybody. We don't want to be beholden to governments. We don't want to be beholden to industry or big donors. We want this think tank to be a think tank of the people.
And you have a record number of small donors, right?
Yeah. So we have hundreds of thousands of members.
Right.
We have over 500,000 members.
So anybody listening can be a member.
That's right. And literally hundreds of thousands of people. And that's actually a very significant chunk of how we're funded.
Yeah.
And actually only about, we don't take any money from governments, and only about 3% of our entire revenue comes from, you know, corporate businesses and stuff. So basically we're funded by people who believe that, and I think hopefully rightly so, giving money to Heritage, then Heritage will go and they will fight for a better future.
And we're talking about the founding principles, conservatism. Right. I call it the conservative mothership. That's a good summary, right?
Right. I mean, I use my line is my job is to keep America free, safe, and prosperous, which I think is that was foundational to the structure of the Constitution. Provide for the common defense, limited government to maximize people's liberties, a Bill of Rights to ensure that we protect individual liberty. And a free market economy so we can maximize human potential and economic growth.
Do you think that America should remain a bastion for those who want to be free, prosperous, and safe? If you do, join this man. Join the Heritage Foundation today. You won't regret it. Heritage.org. We continue our special President's Day discussion with the Vice President of Heritage, James Carafano, here in studio. Stay on this channel.
You're listening to Dr. Sebastian Gorka, a man who's taken down Eastern European governments with just the sound of his voice.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. That's Mark Lord. He's got a pretty good set of vocal cords himself. We are back. This is President's Day special edition of America First with our good buddy. He's our regular in studio every Friday to talk national security. But now we get to do a long form interview with none other than the vice president of the conservative mothership, the Heritage Foundation. Join them today. Become a member of the conservative mothership at heritage.org. Don't forget, if you've missed anything, any of our specials, any of our regular programming, you can get it 24/7 at our website, sebgorka.com. It cycles 24/7. That's S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com. You can download the America First app. Go to the App Store. You can listen anytime you want to. Download it from the podcast app as well. And likewise, we are on YouTube. We are on Rumble. We live stream every day. Don't miss a thing. In the break, Jim, we discussed the state of strategic education, military history, so forth, a real issue in America today. Let me ask the tough question. You know me. I've done a lot of stuff in CT, a lot of teaching, counterterrorism. Right. But my real first love is grand strategy, right? The big picture, the ends, ways, means stuff. I look at the last 20 years, 25 years of U.S. grand strategy, not impressive most of the time. Is it fair to say that we, you know, let me give this quote and you can react to it. Ed Luttwak, Right. Very iconoclastic, strategic author, super famous, wrote dozens of books. I asked him a question once at a book event at National Defense University at the War College. I said, Professor Luttwak, what would you react to those who say that America has become somewhat astrategic of late, lacking in strategy? Classic Ed response. Well, what is the point of being stupid if you're a superpower? No, what is the point of being a superpower if you can't be stupid? Right?
Well, that actually was the answer I was going to give, which is when the Cold War ended, part of the reason why we weren't very good at strategy was in many ways the demand for that had gone away. People keep saying we need a strategy. Most people strategies are for really hard problems. And because if you could do it, you wouldn't need a strategy. Say if
changing a tire on a car doesn't require a strategy.
Right. So, Elon Musk made electric cars. Elon Musk decided we're going to go into the space business. That requires a strategy because you're doing something very different than you're doing. Right. So when you're doing something very different that requires a significant level of resources and you have to make a hard choice.
And prioritize.
That's when you need a strategy. So America's a sleepy country in the 1930s. We're in the Depression. We have the 20th largest army in the world. Who needs a strategy? But when you have to go from that to fighting a global conflict and mobilizing your entire economy and putting half of it into defense, you need a strategy for that. So when the Cold War ended, we lost the guiding lifeline of an idea. What's America's purpose and challenge in the world?
What is the intelligence community for?
Right. I mean, we're a global power with global interests and global responsibilities. But okay, so what's the problem here? Which is why, as you go from the series of presidents post 1990, all of them have ideas about, and they all kind of just peter away. Because there's now, here's what's changed, and here's why can't we just be stupid? Is if you look, for example, at Bush, Obama, Trump, and Biden, the one thing they actually all have in common is list the top challenges in the world today. They will all have the same list: Russia, China, Iran, North Korea. Now they might have different answers on how to deal with it.
Yeah.
They might have other things on their list, like, Obama and Biden have climate change, Trump cared about the border. But America can no longer be a placid power, because when you add all those countries up together, that is as significant a challenge as the Soviet Union ever was. And when you look at China and where China's going unchallenged, they will create a world that we will not recognize in two decades. So the need for the hard choices, the need for a grand strategy, that has come back. And now it is really important. And actually, I think, to be fair, we do see people grappling with this idea in the way they hadn't. And I will say one thing about the Trump administration. And look, I'm not partisan. Heritage is a nonpartisan foundation, not Republican, not Democrat. I don't even actually belong to a political party.
Wow.
The reality is say what you want about Trump. He got it. He recognized the world that we are in, that this is an age of great power competition. He recognized that America could not be indifferent to the challenges in the world, and that we had to rise to those challenges. And we had to do two things. And this, I think, is really the key to sound strategy. It's not just about hurting the other guy. It's about protecting your ability to grow and be strong. Because remember, the thing about these competitions is they're going to be protracted. They're going to be long by nature, because if you could just duke it out with the other guy, you duke it out and get it over with. The problem is you can't, both sides can't really figure out a way to get at each other.
Yeah.
And so it really becomes a test of wills and time. And when you're fighting for the long term, retaining your ability to compete and be strong is as important as getting after the bad guy. And I think people say, well, Donald Trump can't do that. He's not a general. He's not a smart. Look, some of the greatest strategists in our history were people who didn't have formal. Nobody taught George Washington how to be a grand strategist.
Or Truman.
Look at Washington. It's like, the guy runs away from Long Island. He won't stay and fight. What's the deal here? Washington knew that the key was keeping the army in big, and as long as you could keep the army big, eventually he would wear the British down. He was a brilliant strategist. Abraham Lincoln was a brilliant strategist, right?
Never for a lawyer, pretty good.
For a guy whose sole military experience was having his horse stolen, he did okay. Donald Trump is in a class, and I say that, you know, he has all kinds of flaws, and maybe you don't like the armchair and the tweeting and ever, and you can, and all, I won't dispute any of that, but this man
had
strategic caliber thinking.
And I am proud to this day to be in those meetings for the National Security Strategy, one of the first documents to bear that name. That is actually a strategy. So things were bad for several decades, started to get better. We'll see what the future brings. Every week we're analyzing it with James Carafano in studio. One more segment left. Where did the time go? I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is the Salem Radio Network. Whatever you do, stay on this channel.
More journalism in his little finger than CNN has on its entire network. Sebastian Gorka.
Is it Sebastian Gorka? I think it might be the Jim Carafano show, because he told me what I have to talk about. We've only got 3 minutes left on this special edition for President's Day, and he wants me to ask him, Jim, or spontaneously, who's your favorite president?
Seriously? Oh, well, let me think. You know, seriously, I do have one, and it's Dwight Eisenhower. And the reason for that, you know, you always pick your favorite president by what's most relevant to you now. Yeah. And Eisenhower was, he understood the challenges of great power competition. He understood that military, economic, political, that they all went together in that. And he understood prudence in power, right? That it was important to
Machiavelli's real message.
Right. That you, but, you know, power is a precious asset, and you use it when you have to, and you don't waste it. You don't waste American lives. You don't waste American treasure. That it's important to be strong, but also to grow your economy. And, you know, so many little things. You know, he was always a man of God. He always was a religious person, but he never wore his religion on his sleeve until he became president. And when he became president, he consciously did that because he thought America needs this. Mm-hmm. So he's the guy that did, you know, In God We Trust on the coin. He's the president that going to church every Sunday. He regularly consulted a minister at the there's a long correspondence because he truly believed that God needed to be in the public square again because America needed that for its soul. So there's so many ways I really thought. I mean, you know,
do you have a recommendation when it comes to readings on Eisenhower?
I'll tell you my favorite book.
You got a minute
my
left.
Very, very favorite book.
Yes.
Mike Duran's book on, I can't remember the exact title.
On the Middle East?
On Eisenhower and the Suez Crisis.
Yes.
And I can't remember the title, but you can find it for me. But the reason why I love this book is Eisenhower made a huge mistake in how he handled the Suez Crisis. And he recognized that he made a mistake. He learned from that mistake and he moved forward. And to me, it was a brilliant example of strategic leadership with leaders who were self-critical enough to examine their own behaviors, take responsibility for their failures, and move forward. And Mike really details that.
No movie recommendations today. Extraordinary, given that Jim is our guest. But you got a book recommendation for presidents. I think it's rather apt. And it's Ike's Gamble.
That's
Ike's Gamble by our other buddy, Mike Duran, D-O-R-N-A. The challenges that our presidents face, the strategies that are so important to us, and also the relevance of eternal truth. Follow this man, J.J. Carafano, Vice President of the Heritage Foundation. And, you know, if you've got 5 minutes today, just join up. Become part of the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network. Wherever you are, keep your head on your swivel. Watch your six. Never give up, never give in. Hold the line, dear friends, and stay frosty.